next session, we're going to be talking about how to turn the great resignation into the great reimagination. We're joined by Bev Kay, who's a best-selling author, international keynote speaker, and founder and CEO at Bev Kay & Co. We're joined by Marina Coymans, Chief People Officer at HLB International. We're joined by Seren Aramoglu, I think I got that right, Vice President of People Excellence, Talent and Reward at Molnlycke. And last but certainly not least, our good friend who's back again, Anna Mindeloff, Chief People Officer at Viscous Group. Welcome, everyone. How are you all?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah.
That's it. I feel like I'm outnumbered right now as well. I feel like the press is all on me now to be the best host I can be. Anna, we did say backstage that we've got, you didn't know it was a tradition, but it is now a tradition that whenever you join us, you have to answer the first question. So we're going to jump in. Sure. you're like, yeah, I have no choice. Yeah. What are your observations that you've made around the Great Resignation, the Great Awakening? I've heard a million names at this point before this, but I'd love to hear everyone's observations, starting with yourself.
Yeah, my main observation is that I don't think it will end. I think it will continue. And I think we need to understand that the big resignation is more of about the big reshuffling. We need to listen more to the employees and the talents out there on what they want to see. And we need to be much more listening into what they need and what they want in order to create the best of workplaces and be an attractive employer. In total, I would say, it's so many people leaving organizations. I did during the COVID time. I just joined Fiskars. And it's not only about pay or, you know, that you're bored or anything. It's that you want to connect the things that you are doing every single day with something that is meaningful for you. And you want to be somewhere where you can sort of touch base on the values that you think is important for yourself and for the company you work for. And I think that's the trend we will see with more purposefulness, more meaningfulness. And that's what people are looking for at the moment. That's my sort of, so that's why I'm saying I don't think it will end. I think it will continue. It's more the big reshuffling, the big reimagination from the perspective that what you dream about, what is it that you want to become or be through your job and through in life in total. So life management is high on the agenda.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I didn't even make that connection that you are one of those people.
Yes, I am.
just left and joined a new bit. What was it about the organization Fiskars Group that attracted you? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, a lot. My last 3 years I spent at Phoenix Outdoor, which is also very known brands, loved brands by consumers. And I used to work for companies like that. I love the history with the brand. And Fiskars is a lot of famous brands, historical brands. So that's one of the main reasons. But mainly I actually joined the organization because they want me to drive talent management, talent attraction, and talk about how we can become the best of employers. And so the manager I have today is someone who wants to drive that and focus on that. So that's great. That's why I joined and that's why I left.
Amazing. Well, congratulations, first and
foremost. Thank you so much.
Yeah, on that. I'd love to hear from everyone else.
I can go ahead, Chris, here, because I'm also one of the product of Great Resignation myself. So during this period, I also changed a company, industry, and a country. So it was quite a change. And I did all of that in the middle of the pandemic. I mean, the first 6 months, I didn't see anyone in the company in person. And the reason why I think it all happened and happening to many people now is because we were forced to change our lenses. It just didn't happen because I wanted it to happen, but I had the chance to really take a step back and reflect on, you know, what I want to do, what is my purpose, and then am I really realizing it where I am? So it really helped me to change my lens. And then I made the decision to make this change. And I think, again, it's a reshuffle. It's continuing. It's not going anywhere. We are in the middle of it, maybe in the beginning of it, the way I see it. But then it's beyond the discussion of the hybrid workplace, etc. It's beyond that. It's beyond the, you know, the workplace, but also how we approach talent, how we approach people, how we approach development. So I myself, as a HR professional, I'm very excited about this. Not that I'm not worried about resignation and the risk that it brings. Of course, we all have to face it, but it is really reimagination itself.
It's very interesting because maybe it is by coincidence. I also changed jobs during the pandemic. I joined HLB in October 2020, so the first year of the pandemic. And I even relocated from the Netherlands to London. So that was a big change. And just recently, because of the possibility of remote working, I now work 50% from Spain and 50% from London. So I think I have best of both worlds. And I'm an example of the possibilities of remote working. And as Saren said, I had the same thing. I had, before I joined HLB, I had my own small boutique consultancy firm with four other people. And I was really reflecting and during the pandemic, it was really lonely. And then I already knew HLB, and it was a very good click with their culture and my values. And we started talking, and here I am. So yeah, it's interesting. And for me, it has a lot of opportunities, the pandemic as well.
I promise to the audience, we didn't plan this. We didn't go and choose three people. This just shows you like the scale, right? That we're talking about, that we have three HR executives right here. And we're not forgetting about you, Bev. We'll come to you in a second, that have just recently made those moves. And it wasn't for, in many cases, for more money or for a better job title, or it was because I've had a lot of time to think, and is this really where I want to spend my time? And is it aligned with my values and my purpose? So super interesting. That was such a coincidence to all three of you have gone through that process. What about you, Bev? What are you hearing from both the clients that you're working with and also the recent book and the work that you're doing?
You know, first I want to say, as a longtime person who studied career development for decades, I'm thrilled for all of you that your careers are blooming. And, you know, it's about, I wrote a book called Up Is Not the Only Way in 1982. And finally, people are getting it. Only took 40 years, but I'm thrilled that you're all finding your next career adventure. But, you know, I'll say, yes, it's the great reshuffle. Yes, it's the great reimagination. You know what I'm concerned about? I think we're forgetting the great comeback, that yes, people are going. People are coming back. And I just wrote an article on that I'll make sure I get you, because I don't think our leaders in our organizations have even considered the different ways people are coming back, attitudes, et cetera. And I can say more about that, but that would be something unique that we better start thinking about.
It's a new mindset needed, right? So the leaders need to change the mindset and think about work differently. So, and if, to be honest, how many leaders do we meet that are not prepared for this mentally? They are still saying you need to be at the office Tuesdays and Thursdays. That's when we meet at the office. The other days you can do what you want, right?
Right. Yeah. In that article, I say they're coming back one of three ways. They're coming back burning. I'm glad to get back. They're coming back churning. I don't know that I really want to come back. And they're coming back yearning. You know, I hope now it really is different. So we need to prep for those kinds of things.
Yes, I agree. And leadership isn't prepared, I think. When I talk about it, I talk for leadership from control to trust, because leaders want everyone back. Some leaders want everyone back 5 days or more in the office, but that, in my view, that's not going to happen, at least not in our organization. The people come back differently, and they come back with their own wishes and almost demands. If I can do that, I will quit.
And eventually, I mean, again, we said we are in the beginning of it, because like we were in this type of work environment, which we were forced into. And then here we are now able to come back, and we have some leaders going that direction. But I guess it's a pendulum swing that we will find ourselves where we need to eventually, but as of today, I don't think we are there yet. So any of the solutions that are out there, I have a feeling that that is not the final solution. It's just the best solution that we were maybe able to find. Right. But then I really see it every day that it is not going to be the absolute solution that we will go for, because we are really in the beginning of that, you know, the pendulum swing that is coming back and forth, and we'll find the best way to go about it.
And HR better be ready. Yeah. You know, we all better be ready.
I think so many companies are focusing on like when and where we come back, but no one's focusing on the why. And I said this in the last panel, but my team even said the same thing to me. I said, oh, let's all come in on the Monday. And we came in on the Monday and everyone just sat at their computers. And it was like, why do we even bother coming back on the Monday? And they were like, we don't want to come back in on the Monday because that was not productive. And I was like, I agree. Well, and I realized we had no plan of why. We have to be a lot more intentional if we want people to come back, of what that looks like. So I had to sit down with the team and just, rather than me guess what I thought would work, just create that together, what would work. And by the way, not everyone agreed. And we had to find a compromise. And that's something that companies are also struggling with, is having a compromise, because it can't all be what everyone wants. You know, there has to be some give and take there. But those are conversations that need to be had one-on-one with managers and company. But many managers aren't even prepared, and they don't even have the language to even have those conversations, or they don't know the parameters on which they can make decisions as well. So it's a tough time on the managers too, right? It's not like they're trying to do a bad job of it. They just don't know what they don't know as well. Bev, what were some of the things that you think that advice would you give to managers and leaders listening then that are managing this return to work?
You know, maybe the simplest thing is tell me what you loved where you were. What parts of it can we bring back if in fact they're coming back? Tell me what was hard so that I get your unique needs.
Yeah.
And if we have not been hit over the head with diversity, et cetera, about everybody's unique needs, we've got to apply that now. So really important.
I saw a lot of nodding heads there. I'm sure people can agree with you definitely in the chat, but sometimes it really is just sitting down and asking those questions and listening, right, and having a conversation.
And you know, Chris, when I did the research for one of the books, I read exit interviews, and I followed the person who wrote "This Is Why I'm Leaving" into their next company, and I said, "Why did you really leave?" And they said, "My boss was a jerk, and I could not stand it anymore." And as a good researcher, we said, "What exactly do you mean by the word jerk?" And they gave us 55 jerkitudinal characteristics. You know, here's what my boss did. And maybe now jerk bosses are being warned. You're going to lose people.
I'm not sure about that. That's usually the ones who seldom understand that they are jerks. You know, they don't see themselves as that. So I think that's the problem. I think the younger generations are much smarter than I am and than we are in my generation, because they will not take the sort of shitty leadership. They are just leaving. They are totally fed up. They will not take abuse or toxic cultures and stuff like that. And they are the ones who are deciding where they are going to live and how their life will look like. They will work maximum the 40 hours a week, probably less, and expect exactly the same amount of money. And I'm looking at them and I'm saying, wow, I expect 50 to 60 hours per week maybe to get to a top position, which is totally wrong, right? It should be their way of doing it. That should be the right way in order to sort of manage your life. But I don't think that the toxic managers understand that they drive a toxic culture. I think that's the only way they can drive it. So I would hope.
We have to kill them off, don't we?
Yeah.
Get rid of them.
Yeah, I think that's a thing to understand for the leadership and the managers, that the balance is now at the employees. and no longer at the employers. So the employees have a choice. They can choose where they want to work. And I think that's for the younger generation specifically, very important, flexibility and freedom of choice. Yeah. I can decide what I want to do and where I want to work. And well, they do it. So
Yeah. It's such a big shift from when I was younger to now. It doesn't even seem like you kind of just got a job and you had the job and you felt that the power dynamic was always with the business, mm-hmm. and you kind of at the mercy of your next role, the way you progress in the business, etc. Anna, you mentioned about it's the opposite. What do you think's driven that? What do you think about this new generation that's made them, not accept that? Like, what is it? Society? Is it society?
I don't know. Probably that we have been curling them a lot when they were growing up, maybe. I think it's healthy. I think it's maybe they have experienced that their parents have been working a lot and it took a lot. And was it worth it? I'm not sure. Very many people there's a lot of studies done on people who do their last weeks or last days or last hours before they pass away. And it's not that they are saying that they wish they worked more. They usually say, I wish I spent more time with my relatives and with my loved ones and less work. So I think that gives some perspective, right? And they probably understood that much better, to have a little bit more fun and feel life with other things than sitting at the desk and having boring meetings. and that's how it should be. It should be fun.
Well, the interesting thing you say, one of the questions I ask at the end of every podcast that I do is, how does your family and kids describe what you do for a living? And most of the CHROs say, I sit at a desk sending emails and having conversations. That's what our kids think. That's all we do. And no wonder they grow up and say, I don't really want to do that till 8, 9 p.m. at night. But also, like the three of you, we all had that moment over the last 2 years to reassess, is this really what I want to do in my life? So that's just kind of, I think that's why it's just kind of excelled it to what we're calling the great resignation, reimagination, etc. As well.
And I think that younger people also, like everyone, should think about how do I want to work for a company that have sound values as a base, and do they live the values? If you talk about sustainability, is it just sustainability on a wall, or do we actually live it, and how does it look like? So it needs to be congruent with your own values, what the company is sort of standing for. And I think that's important. And we should all think like that, not just going where we get the best paycheck or something like that. So, yeah.
No, I want to go and come back as a young person. That's what I want.
It would be very interesting. But on that point, though, the way that the new talent enter a business is completely transformed. As you mentioned, some of you said that you didn't meet your teams for the first 6 months. Some people have never met their teams yet. And also the way you're onboarded. You've never seen an office. You've never bumped into a colleague in a hallway. So from a talent acquisition point of view, as we move more and more remote, I think it's going to be those values and the why and the purpose that is the glue. Because work is no longer a place you go to. So how do you connect people that way? So I'm interested to see how companies evolve from that perspective. And so I would love to hear, how are each of you using this moment to your advantage to attract talent in this current climate?
I mean, Chris, I think it brings, of course, some sort of flexibility, right? The type of flexibility that we didn't have before. So before, we had this idea of, okay, we are hiring and we are hiring people to work in the office. Now, that is off the table, especially for the roles that are quite scarce and difficult to reach. Then we really go about opening them up, of course, and we have to be mindful of the, time zones, etc. We do that because I think it's important for the for other people and the people we are hiring themselves. So we do that, but this actually comes as an advantage. So we open it more and more to 100% remote people, But then at the same time, we are investing on a workplace. So very recently, we have announced that we will move to a new building, new office. And then it might sound like, oh, are you sure you want to do this at this time where, you know, you're in the house? No, we still believe in that. So, but then, of course, we need to work on that compelling reason, right? Like, why is it that we make all the effort to wake up in the morning, get in the car, and get to the office? So what's in it for me? And we believe that we can create that compelling reason. But then we need to show people what it means for them. So when they reach the office, if they are in their cubicle doing their work and going back, that's not a compelling reason. So that's why what I'm saying is that we are not necessarily approaching it one way, meaning like going 100% virtual. No, we are opening it up for more roles, but at the same time, we are investing in a workplace. But again, with the condition to show the compelling reason to people to come back and benefit from this, you know, face-to-face interaction, not only with their teams, but the teams also outside their immediate team.
Saren, how different is this new office going to be from the other one? What are some of the specific changes you've made new office that's going to make people go, you know what, I actually want to go back? Because I'm seeing companies reopen offices, but it's just the same thing.
No, exactly. And the way we dream about it, it's still in the very early stages, but we want to make this seamless between if you're working from home or working from office. So meaning like you might be sitting in a desk in the office, and then some people might be in their homes. So we want to create an environment which is making it seamless in a way to transition from working from home to working in the office. This number one. And number two is like these, you know, creating, again, I'm using the same word because I really like it. So the compelling reasons. So the common work areas that you can discuss, areas that you can share. Again, it's very early. It's really in the stages of designing it. But this is our dream workplace, I must say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it can't be just the same thing, right? You go back and sit at another desk as well. And I'm seeing companies doing really cool things, like you said, like they walk in, their computer's automatically connected, so they're not even thinking about internet. They have the breakout rooms for meetings. They have an open workspace, right? Whether you're the CEO or you've just joined, everyone's working in a collaborative environment. You know, it's interesting. I'm really interested to see how it works. So when we have like that group interacting with a group online, and how do you control that dynamic of, you've got five people in the room and two people online. Yeah. I feel like we've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Super tricky.
That's what we are going to experiment with in July, to have our first hybrid conference. We have global conferences, and normally a lot of people fly all over the world to one place. And now we're planning to have our first hybrid conference. So what we found out during the pandemic, during the previous 2 years, a lot of people could participate in conferences who usually weren't allowed to travel or go to the very five-star hotel, whatever venues we had. But now a lot of people, for example, from the talent pillar are really coming to the conferences, and they like it. So that's why we're planning to have the hybrid conference, not the hybrid office, but the hybrid conference. So we will have an in-person conference, but also people joining from wherever and different time zones as well. So I cannot tell you if it was a success, but that's what we're planning to have best of both worlds.
You know, I just want to build on a word, Saren, that you said you loved. You said the word compelling reason. And now I love that word too. And, you know, I think that when managers lose someone or they're about to go, what managers say is, what can I do to keep you? I think the question, what can I do to keep you, has to be said early. And I've written about it, instead of an exit interview, I think we need a stay interview. And it's such an easy question. You know, I'm so glad to have you on my team. What is one of the most important things that you want from this organization from me?
Yeah.
And maybe if we have the nerve, we actually say, and what would entice you away? It's a scary question. But if I know what they'd leave for, it gives me more ammunition for what I have to do as a leader to keep them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think we need to personalize it much more. So when you talk about the talent attraction part, it's not only do we need to have a great EVP in place, employee value proposition, where we talk about, you know, great stuff that we want to do and what we are aspiring to be. We also need to talk about internal mobility, what we offer as an employer for already existing employees. And I mean, that you, Bev, you sort of invented the word stay interview. I'm so impressed about that. I mean, I thought that was something new. And then you told us it was like 40 years ago, you sort of started to talk about this. That gives a little bit of a perspective for me. But I think this, what Marina is probably going to talk a little bit about, is this internal talent market, right? And yeah. And I think it's so, when we talk about it, when you will talk about it, Marina, it will be a system for it. I don't think we even need a system. We need to start doing the things.
Yes.
In order to, and we need to focus on the skills in the organization. How can we find the transferable skills? And the system will support, of course, but you know, having this kind of thinking, and if, what do you dream about, what do you want to do in the future, and then look into, okay, so what's your strengths and what's the skills you have today, and how can we transfer that somewhere else in the organization to get them to rotate internally? Super engaging. This is what holds me awake at night. How do I fix this in my new organization? Because it will be a mindset shift needed in how we look upon talent. Marina, can you tell us a little bit about your new system? I'm so excited.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. And the system will always be supportive. The system is not the goal, of course. It is really supportive. Yeah, what we're building at the moment is an internal talent marketplace all across the globe. So when we were confronted with the great resignation, we were thinking, well, we are growing as a network. And at the moment, we all have almost 39,000 people. So that's an important talent marketplace. But that's internally. So, and we listened and asked our people, what's really important? A little bit like Bev said, well, what's important for you to work here? And they were talking about, well, we are an international organization, but we don't see the international development possibilities coming up. And they were also talking about, I want to grow, I want to learn, I want to, but not in a dull way. Yeah, we are maybe in a dull business, accountancy and advisory. So that's maybe why people think about it in a dull way. But what we're doing at the moment is the internal talent marketplace has two pillars. One is all about learning and having more of an engaging, exciting learning experience. Everybody's talking about experience. So it's not, we should be different ways than in the classroom. So all kinds of different learning opportunities from different angles, also social learning, mentoring, all kinds of things. So that's one important pillar. So people, hopefully, we have been talking about learning in the flow of work for a long time. This will hopefully support us in building learning in the flow of work and learning internationally from each other as well. So it's not being a trainer or whatever, but it's learning from each other. And the other important pillar is about internal mobility, and not only for permanent jobs, but also for projects, assignments, secondments. People are talking for secondments. And at the moment, I wish we had it live already. We're doing only pilots. But at the moment, we're trying to help our colleagues from HLB Ukraine to find another job somewhere in another country. I wish we could have had the talent place already, because then you know it's all skills-based. And then you know where their skills are needed. At the moment, we see people from Ukraine coming and thinking, well, that's difficult. They don't speak our language. They're a different culture, but they have the skills to do a project or to do a job. So, and that's what's happening all across the globe. The questions were coming, and now we're hoping to, and we see it happening in the pilots, and hopefully from the different pilots, we can roll it out. We are planning to launch it beginning of May all across the globe. And then that will definitely be an element of retention, I think, that we can finally offer them all the learning opportunities, but also the international career opportunities as well. And they can see it for themselves. Yeah, I was mentioning earlier, the power is not longer with the employee, the employer, but with the employee. So yeah, they have their own profile in the system, and they can see it for themselves, looking at their skills and see what's out there and where their skills match. So sometimes there's a big gap. Then you can first do learning. And then once you have your skills up to par, you can apply for another job. But also it's helping us with, for example, big international tenders. Then you have to find a team. Who's going to work on this tender? Cool. And we need these and these skills. And now we know. So hopefully, yeah, I'm really excited about it. And I've been struggling with it for a long time. For the year I came in, and everybody was coming to me, and I'm the chief people officer with a team of three, me, myself, and I. So all the secondments around the globe, they were coming to me, and now I can say, okay, take a look at your skills profile and see if you can find a match. So yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah.
Well, firstly, congratulations, and I'm excited for the journey that you're on.
It is a journey, yeah.
I'm sure everyone listening right now are either on a similar journey who or want to be on a journey where you are, because this ticks so many boxes, right? I think you're empowering your employees as well, because I would love to be able to update my profile, constantly show my skills that I developed. Because if you look at Chris Rainey's CV, my last company, I was there for 10 years. They probably had no idea how my skills had developed and had that in a system. 10 years, yeah. I was a completely different person from when I joined at 17 years old to 27 as well. And in fact, in that company, I asked to work across the business in different departments because I was getting bored after 10 years. And now that's one of the reasons I left, is because I didn't have the opportunity to go and work. And all of the leaders that, again, we speak to on the show or that I interview, they've had 8 careers in one company, because those companies have allowed them to move laterally across the business, across different countries. Like you've just mentioned, Saren, you've moved countries, roles at the moment. So I'm really excited for you and for the team to have that in place, because so many people leave companies and not even knowing that those opportunities even exist in that company. And on the other side, we don't have these skills in our business. And I'm like, you probably don't know. You probably do. They probably do exist. You just don't know that they exist.
Exactly. Yeah. That's on the basis of the network. We know what skills we have, right? Not on the individual basis, but broader.
But here's what that demands. I mean, knowing what skills you have is great. Helping the individual say, I have these skills. This is what I can contribute. These are choices I know I have. And helping the manager start that conversation. And I think, you know, there are ways to talk about internal mobility. You mentioned it, Marina, choices. Yeah. You know, I talk about having career leverage. And if you have career leverage, think of the word lever with two R's. The L is lateral. The E is enrichment. The V is vertical. The second E is exploratory, L-E-V-E. The first R is realignment, maybe moving down to get across and somewhere else. And the last is relocation. Maybe it is right for me to go. And what I've been saying to managers is, you better make sure when you realize someone's leaving, that it is an elegant exit because you have a chance of getting a respectful return.
Yep.
In other words, the boomerang is happening more than ever. And it all depends on how I say adieu and how my manager says goodbye to me.
Love that acronym, by the way.
Yeah.
You need to post that in the chat before we forget it. Someone post that in the chat as well. I absolutely love that. And again, it's funny, Bev, because you've been speaking to me about this for years. And now all of a sudden it's top of mind for everyone, right? This is not new information that's out there.
And Chris, I think it's just been very enlightening for me when I heard from Bev that she talked about up is not the only way years ago. And we didn't come a long way because, again, we had the standard ways of, you know, focusing on succession plans, the nine blocks, you know, like the people who will make it to the top. But now we know that we are living in a world that we need to change the skills ongoing because this is the expectation in the world. And up is not the only way. And I guess what Marina is doing, I think it's absolutely important. Now we have the technology in our hand to do it. But the thing is, how do we get inclusive with managing talent? So rather than only managing the people who are supposed to go up, but rather than you know, looking at this wider perspective, wider talent group, and inclusively helping them. I'm not going to say managing them, but inclusively helping them, because then up is not the only way. So I think it's very eye-opening. And I want to think about why this didn't happen so far. Did we get stuck in a certain place and we didn't think about doing it a little differently? And that's why what I call reimagination.
Right.
I think it might have to do with that we are very busy. We are busy doing tasks. And instead of looking into what I try to learn, I'm learning every day here. What's the skills that are transferable? What's the skills in one function that you can use in another function? And for instance, why is it not common that people in sourcing who are doing at least monthly or even weekly negotiations, why are they not salespeople and vice versa? And if you're really skilled as an internal talent head, you should also be able to do that externally, right? So headhunters that are listening, you guys need to understand how you will find the candidates. That's by looking into skills and competences, right? Not on experience with the title the last 3 years. It doesn't say anything any longer.
And I want to just give a warning. Skills alone does not the marriage make.
No.
Because you could be skilled up the wazoo and hate using those skills. It is about your skills, your interests, your passion, values.
Yes,
so absolutely. I worry about people who just look for a skill fit. Job fit is much more than skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. I fully agree. And that's why the social learning comes into place, because that makes it more social, working together, talking about what the job encompasses. And then you can think, oh, I have the right skills, but is this the job I want to do? No, not at all. And I see a lot of other things changing as well. For example, Anna was touching up on it. The old-fashioned job descriptions. I think job descriptions are a thing of the past. It's not about job descriptions. It is about fitting skills and fitting roles, and not, okay, I'm now a salesperson, I need to be in sourcing or whatever. It's not about the silos. It's about the horizontal careers, etc. Exactly. And so,
and how I market myself.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I feel like we need another session. The conversation.
But, That's how it goes when I'm starting to talk, you know.
See what happens when I get you all together. I knew this would be the case.
Well, you know, if I could just add one funny thing.
Yeah,
I told my husband the other night that on my gravestone, I wanted to say, finally, Beverly, up is the only way. Anyway,
I think we'll end it there. Thanks. Up is the only way. Thanks so much to all of you for joining. It's been a pleasure, and great to see you all again. Bev, I want everyone to grab a copy of your book. So now's the time for the plug. Where can people grab a copy of the book? Tell everyone a bit more, Bev, because I really want to get it in everyone's hands.
So I'll just say I wrote 5 books over my, all of them relate to how to keep your talent. So the biggest one is Love 'Em or Lose 'Em, Getting Good People to Stay. It's in its 6th printing. The other is the book on stay interviews. And the third is a book titled Up Is Not the Only Way. And the fourth is a book titled Help Them Grow or Watch Them Go. So it's like, you know, I'm in the later stages of my life, and this is my chance to push all of that. Anyway. Yeah.
No, I love it, Bev. I'm so happy that you've been here. And if you ever need anyone helping you to make great titles of books, Bev's your woman. absolutely amazing. And if those that are listening, those links are already in the chat. I can see them there. So make sure you click on that. But thanks so much, Marina, Saren, Anna, Bev. Thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.